My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. We are another week at the pod. It's what they call the podcast these days. I know this because I'm a professional podcaster, and you can believe this because you're listening to a podcast I'm creating. So trust all around. Welcome to a new week of the show. This week I have a brand new guest, Andrew Elmore. He will introduce himself. He's got some ties to the video game world and just has a great conversation about our topic this week. And we will have him on future episodes as well. I really enjoyed the conversation that we had. So it's really cool to kind of come back and find new folks for new perspectives and just kind of hear new thoughts. And I also have a returning guest on the back half of the episode. My wife, Nicole, joins us again to answer the same question. That question being, what is your favorite video game system of all time? So we previously had an episode where we discussed our favorite handhelds. This is console systems or console hardware or whatever you want to call it. Really fun dialogue to kind of have and really kind of cool to hear from people's thoughts. So I'll definitely ask this question again in the future and reconnect with some of my previous guests and maybe even some more new ones just to kind of hear their thoughts and their reasons as to why they pick what they pick. I've got no other real news up front, no other interesting things happening on the back end. I finished work on my volume 4 of my 32-bit library series of books, so we will be getting that to print soon, and I'm very excited about that work. But otherwise, just living life, having fun. Y'all enjoy the episode this week, and I appreciate you listening to it. Do like and comment or review it or whatever you want to do. That stuff kind of helps. Maybe it kind of bumps it up and maybe exposes it to somebody new who can discover the show. And if y'all have any thoughts and questions or comments about the episodes, reach out to me on social media at Darren Hupke. And if you have ideas for questions you'd like to hear me ask and answer, definitely love to hear some of your ideas. I've got a whole slew of some new questions to ask for another wave of episodes, but would definitely love to add more to the pile if y'all think you have something cool. That being said, this is ran on long, and I didn't even have a purpose for it. So enjoy the episode. See y'all next week. Thanks for joining then. This will be your first time on the show. So that being said, like, definitely introduce yourself, like maybe like some of your like background in gaming, just some whatever personal details you kind of want to share to introduce people to who you are and what you do. And then I'll have an icebreaker question to ask after that. So I'll let you do your primary introduction first, and then I'll hit you with something that's on the spot that you didn't have time to prepare for, and we'll see how that goes. Nice. Take it away. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Andrew Elmore. I am a visual designer and composer for video games. I don't know, mostly in the indie space these days, but previously I was at Bungie for most of the last 5 years. And prior to that, been kind of bouncing around, Wizards of the Coast, a lot of freelance stuff in between here and there. But I don't know how to introduce myself anymore. I'm all over the place these days.
Right. All good. Let's learn a little bit about you and find out what is your favorite game that has a color in its title?
Oh, man. That's a good question. Or at least like an oddly specific question, which is basically what a good question is, right?
Yeah. I hope it just makes an awkward trap and makes you think about something obscure.
It does, because now I'm just like, have I ever played a video game in my entire life? I don't know if I have. They're all vanishing from memory.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Okay, so Red Star is that like sort of, I don't even want to call it a Contra-like. It's close to like a beat 'em up with guns.
Gotcha.
But that's a PS2 game that exists. This is tough. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to give you so much dead air here. I'm just like,
no, it's fine. It's fine. This is the goal.
Man,
this is the goal
here. Yeah.
That I mean, being
sure,
said,
yeah, let's go with Black. That game's fine. That's fun.
Black. Okay, cool. I mean,
sure.
I do remember that, being really high octane and action packed and everything at its release and everything. I enjoyed it.
It's that, or I start digging too deep, and I'm just like, Dodonpachi Black Label. Does that count? Like, I don't think that counts.
But yeah, for this episode, then, I sent over a list of some of the questions maybe you'd be interested in answering, and I'm going to pick one of these, and we'll kind of go from there. But on the top of your list that you said you had some answers for, top of mind, what is your favorite video game console of all time? Like, that's a good one to ask, I think, for sure. And so, I know I have mine. Well, I think I have mine. You know what? I don't think I can definitively say mine, but I'd love to hear maybe your thoughts. Like, if you have one, or if you're struggling like me to maybe definitively put a number one or not.
Yeah, I was also struggling on that one until I decided to make up an arbitrary rule for myself that would make it easier. You said console, so that rules out the PSP, which is kind of tied neck and neck for the original Xbox for me. Then, like, right behind those is probably the Saturn. But I think if we're going to pick an actual console, I'm going to go with the Sega Dreamcast Part 2, a.k.a. the Microsoft Xbox.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a cool one. So what about the Xbox do you think did it for you? Was that like a time and place for you? Was that like the genres of games, specific games? Like, why do you think that was like the most appealing for you then?
I mean, at the time, I was, you know, much younger, obviously, and I had never seen anything like Halo. I mean, that's it sounds so trite to say now, but at the time, it was unbelievable going from, you know, things like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark and some stuff like that to very quickly just having this massive technical leap forward with a lot of fascinating like design principles and art direction stuff going on there and all that. But then I got my Xbox in Christmas of 2002. And so I got that pack and disc that had Sega GT 2002, which I would learn to love a great deal, but also was Jet Set Radio Future, which I loved immediately. And having not played Jet Grind Radio yet at the time, that was another thing that I'd never really seen anything like before. And throughout a lot of the Xbox's lifespan, they kept trying to court Japanese developers with all of these, with all these very strange releases. It was like Sega followed up a lot of their previous franchises, right? So they brought back Panzer Dragoon and some stuff like that, but they were also throwing out like weird things like Gun Valkyrie and like a Sega Soccer Slam and just all this other random stuff on the Xbox that was just fantastic and super creative and weird. The kinds of stuff that I would have been like drowning in on PS2 if I knew about it or had a PS2 at the time. Yeah, I mean, when I think about it now, looking back, the reasons that I love the Xbox so much, it's part of it is just because it's endured so well. It was, you know, they shipped that thing capable of HD resolutions with, you know, what do you call it? Broadband internet in there in 2001 you know, 5.1 Dolby Digital and all that stuff. So it still plays very nicely with modern home theater setups and stuff like that. And with the Insignia service recently coming back online, or we have Xbox Live back, the original Xbox Live back effectively via Insignia, which is a kind of fan run service thing. But all that to say, it's given me the opportunity in the last like year or two to go back and play a lot of those games in online multiplayer in a context that I was not able to at the time. And then, you know, other things like HDMI mods and stuff that have just allowed it to keep on kicking. There are all kinds of fun mods and stuff you can do to Xboxes that I was doing at the time and now. Although now it's usually hardware mods that I try to pay someone much smarter than me to do so that I don't destroy it in the process. But yeah, I think mostly, though, it's the library. It's like the fact that most of the like third-party multi-platform games, for the most part, there are exceptions, obviously, but most of them look and run better on the original Xbox as opposed to the PS2 or GameCube. And yeah, there's just a lot of weird stuff there. I feel like after the Dreamcast was put to bed, they just very quickly, Sega was like, all right, and just kind of, you know, dust their fingers off and like, let's go over to the other console that has almost the exact same controller and just, you know, pick up where we left off. And just, yeah, I don't know. It's fantastic.
I love that about the Xbox, and I think there was definitely, there was communication there between Sega and Microsoft. I think there was even like early discussions of like having the Xbox be able to read Dreamcast games. Like they were trying to form some kind of thing early on deal with that. I don't know if I read that in, it's one of these like Dreamcast Year One, Dreamcast Year Two, these cool books that I got through Kickstarter. That kind of spoke to some interviews, or it may have been just some deep diving I was doing just on my own, but that makes sense, and I feel like that could be real at some point in time. Like maybe it wasn't like ready to go and greenlit and everything, but I definitely believe there had to have been discussions, because on the Dreamcast they had already partnered with Microsoft to help them initially roll out some of their online service stuff before they went on their own to do it, and then having that the Microsoft CE like back end stuff like for developers. So there clearly were already conversations between the two companies. And then yeah, like you mentioned the controller, like it has those two like expansion slots or jump pack slots or whatever they technically were called. But yeah, you knock out that green Xbox jewel and you technically, you know, could have easily had a VMU in there to like save and kind of roll forward. And then, yeah, Sega not having, like, you know, hey, Nintendo and Sony, like, you help knock us out. Like, we're going to give more games here to Microsoft. Like, what did they do? Crazy Taxi and Phantasy Star Taxi were, like, 3. On GameCube. And well, I mean, on PS2 and GameCube,
they just
ported. Yeah, that. But then, yeah, Xbox got Crazy Taxi 3 and Jet Set Radio Future and Shenmue 2 and, like, Panzer Dragoon. Like, it got, like, okay, like, you're clearly given all the good stuff over here to one side instead of just being multi-platform, which was always interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like, they did do, like, Sega themselves did some neat exclusives on the other platforms as well, you know, like that Shinobi reboot on PS2 and Nightshade, the follow-up and stuff like that. But, I mean, yeah, I like, the big one that we're not talking about yet is Outrun 2 in 2006, being some of, I think, the best games ever made on that system. And, you know, there are other conversions of some of those in different forms out there, but I mean, that was designed by Sumo Digital for the Sega Chihiro board, which is basically just an Xbox with more RAM built into an arcade machine or an arcade cab. And there's a lot of stuff out there like that, and so you end up with the situation where, like, you have a console that like Sega's putting all their weird stuff on, then you have like a lot of like year later ports of like the PS2's like horror games, but with more content. So, you know, like the Fatal Frames and Silent Hill 2 and 4 and stuff like that. But I'm trying to think of like FromSoft is doing a bunch of weird stuff on there, like Murakumo and the Otogi games. I'm trying to think of the other, like, there's some other weird, like,
Phantom Dust was one of those exclusives.
Phantom
as
Dust
well.
Is incredible. Yeah. And Phantom Crash, a completely different game from my homies at Genki.
Genki, yeah.
Yeah.
Tokyo Highway Battle games are always great games. Like, I love those games. But yeah, the Xbox is a cool pick. I'm a big PlayStation person. I mean, as the, the books and stuff that I wrote. But I've always liked, like the original Xbox definitely, like, for its first like console and for its first attempt, like, you can't deny they like definitely like overachieved for sure, and did some really like really great work that led into the 360, and like that, you know, is a fantastic console in itself, you know, and for what it did with like Xbox Live Arcade and achievements and things like that. I love like the little things that were kind of brought to life that just evolved from that Xbox experience. Definitely appreciate that. That's really cool.
Yeah, for sure. And just a last note on that, it was kind of the last time that Xbox is pushing a lot of like big Japan exclusives as well, like stuff that only came out over there, like action games like Magatama. There's other weird experimental stuff, Thousand Land, Drihu, Triangle again. I'm just giving people weird stuff to look up later. Let's see.
Wasn't there a Shin Megami Tensei? There's a Shin Megami Tensei online. Yeah.
Which is their like weird MMO thing that didn't really.
Yeah.
Did that even? I don't think that even ended up online.
I don't
Did
think
it?
So.
Or, I think they ended up using a lot of the models for Nocturne, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of the enemy models and things like that were ended up being reused, but that was a strange one as well.
Yes, for sure.
I've got that pulled up there. I'll read you later, Tab. But cool. I don't know that I have an answer. I mean, obviously being the PlayStation person, I don't know. Like, I've liked all the PlayStation generations for different reasons and everything, but nostalgically, I would probably have to say the PS2 maybe for my favorite of all time. And I only do that because I can cheat and think oh, the system was backwards compatible. So I could, if I really wanted to play some PS1 games, and that's breaking my own rules probably in what I should actually appropriately answer. But just some of the games there, and it just felt like that generation was so long for the PS2 lifespan. You had early games that introduced some larger 3D concepts, as dull as it could be. Dynasty Warriors 2 was one of those early games that I just blew my mind thinking I can beat up hundreds of people all in any one level. This is amazing. But that's the same console that still ended in, you had Shadow of the Colossus and Guitar Hero and all these late generation things that bled into PS3 and 360 and stuff. But it's just such a long winded system that did so much. And I mean, all genres were kind of covered in a special way. And, I like the way it looked. I like those cool little blue and green LEDs and the little PlayStation symbol that you can rotate if you stood it up vertically, and not having the built-in network adapter probably didn't help much if it's online fairing, but still having games like SOCOM, and that's where I first experienced Final Fantasy XI online. That was my first time ever playing an MMO and everything as well. So I just got a lot of love, I think, for that PS2. So if I had to definitively say one today, on this date, it would be PS2. I may convince myself otherwise later.
Objectively, that's the right answer. I don't know, man. That's where all the actual coolest and weirdest stuff lives.
Yeah.
That's where you have your God Hands and Death by Degrees and Psygirls and what other wilds, Project Minerva. There's just so much weird stuff on PS2. Lifeline, I don't even know.
Yeah.
It's
Lifeline, yeah. That using your headset to speak, That was that pre what was that game that came out from Ryan Payton, that Camouflage Studios?
Oh yeah, Republic.
Yeah. Yeah, that was to me when that game was first announced and all stuff, I kept thinking of Lifeline in the back of my head. And
totally,
And then there was even a Dreamcast game that was supposed to be kinda like that, but I always loved the art style for. It was
Seaman. No.
No. That game is amazing though. Didn't that get a PS2 Japanese port? Yeah. So more reasons to love the PS2. But oh man, there's a Dreamcast thing in the back of my mind. I think it was an acronym, and I think it was I something something. It wasn't really you use a microphone or anything, but I think you didn't directly control characters. You gave them commands to meet certain places, and the idea was that you were watching them kind of through security cameras, I think, to kind of guide them along. I totally spaced on the name of that game, but Lifeline.
Oh, that
speaking
sounds so
the
familiar now.
In Republic, yeah. It had really cool character art and cover art, I remember. Always loving and picking it up as a kid, but never actually making the purchase because it was I don't want to not control characters. That doesn't sound like a video game. This doesn't make any sense. But a cool concept I'd love to maybe actually track down and find and maybe play. I'll send you a message if I remember the name later.
Yeah, please. It's going to bother me all day.
Yeah, I'll remember it as soon as we stop. But cool.
That's how it goes. Yeah.
That's our favorite consoles of all time as of this moment before we decide otherwise. So thank you, Andrew, for joining that call, and thank you for your first episode. We'll have you on for a couple more for sure in the future.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Welcome, Nicole, to another episode. I have an icebreaker for you before we get into the main question.
All right.
So what is your favorite time period to experience a video game in?
Time period?
Yeah. Like, do you like games in, like, medieval fantasy, olden days type of thing, futuristic sci-fi things, modern day farming things?
I definitely don't think that I'm into, like, futuristic anything. But I will say, like, I do love, like, the medieval times and kind of,
like,
you know.
Dinner and tournament?
Yes, dinner and tournament with the horses and the jousting, the carnivals. Yeah, all those things. whatever they call them.
Tournament.
I guess. I would say that because there are a few games that I really like, and I think they're kind of like placed in those eras. So I'm going to say in the past.
Like medieval fantasy bullshit?
Yes, I like it.
Okay. Okay. Well, thanks for answering that. This episode's question that I'm going to ask is maybe not one that's requires a whole lot of thought, or maybe it does. I don't know how much energy it took. But what is your favorite video game system of all time? And then maybe I'll ask you some questions to elaborate or dig a little bit deeper with that. But do you have a favorite video game system? Is it definitive? Does it, like, you know, do you struggle back and forth with maybe one or two other ones? Or do you just outright know what your favorite is?
I would say it's not definitive for sure. I think that I love this system because of just, like, the pure joy that it brought to me when I got it. And I think also just because how old I was and just, like, the style of the games and everything that I played on it. So I'm going to say the Super Nintendo. And it's so funny, though, because when I got it, I don't remember how old I was, but I got it as a Christmas gift. And I didn't have any console before that. I remember going to, like, my cousin's house. Like, two of my cousins had a Nintendo, and we would play pass the controller back and forth, play Super Mario Brothers, Duck Hunt, you know, have to blow into the cartridge, and, you know, you kind of have to, like, slam it down a little bit. And I always wanted to have my own system, but my parents, for whatever reason, just, like, never bought one for my brother and I. So we only really got to play any kind of video games, like, going to someone else's house and visiting family. So the year that I got the Super Nintendo, my brother also got a Sega Genesis at the same time. And so it was, like, the ultimate Christmas because, you know, we finally got not one, but two systems in our house. And it was really, really fun and exciting. I think one of my, like, first loves on there was I got a copy of Super Mario Brothers All-Stars, which had, like, you know, multiple titles in it. And I know a lot of people don't like Mario 2. I always loved that just because the way, like, you could be Peach and she would just, like, float through the level. That was, like, one of my favorite things about that game. I also really enjoyed the music to that. But I would say that it's not, like, a definitive answer, just because I would also go and sneak into my brother's room while he was out hanging with friends or wherever, and I would play his Sega Genesis, and I would play this game called Sunset Riders, and it was like a multiplayer, so I did learn how to play the game because we played together, but it was really fun just playing it on my own and sneaking into his room, and that just like added like, you know, excitement. And then he would like come home and like get mad and yell at me, get out of his room. And it's his system. But also just the fact that like there were some games at the time, like I loved The Lion King, the movie, mm-hmm. like loved it. So of course I had to have the game. Got the game, and I could only play like a couple of minutes of it. I couldn't do it. It was so hard. I remember, you know, just I wish I remembered how old I was, but it was just like I would have to ask my brother to help me play. I had to ask my mom to help me play and try and beat some levels. And like, it was just so ridiculously hard. I remember, like, returning it because we got it from, like, a video store that we would walk over there and just rent, you know, video games or movies and things like that. But I was so bummed out returning it just because, like, I wanted to play it so bad but I couldn't. Because it was just so hard.
How many times do you think you rented it to attempt to play more?
I think we rented it twice. Well, technically it would have been twice because we had to pay twice. But it was more just like we rented it the one time. And because I really wanted to play it and it was really, really frustrating and like everybody in the family had to like attempt to play it because I was so bummed out. We kept it for longer than the rental. So I think we ended up keeping it for like a total of like 6 days or something. But yeah, after that, I think everybody was pretty frustrated and they were like, let's take this game back. we can't play this game. But I think that's like a lot of games. I think a lot of games for me at that time were a little bit difficult. But I still had a lot of fun because even though like, you know, I was a kid and my parents never wanted to have video games in the house, I think once it was like, they were exposed to it and we like forced them to try, it was really entertaining for us to watch as well, because it's like, oh, my mom's like jumping with Mario and her whole controller and body is moving up and down because she's trying to like jump. And so that was just like really funny and really memorable about like the whole thing.
That's funny. Yeah, it's an interesting choice. I mean, I guess just, you know, the nostalgia of, like, that being the first system obviously makes sense. I do remember, like, we had the original NES as kids, and, you know, I have, like, an old baby picture of, like, me and Casey playing it, like, on Christmas when we got it and everything. And I loved the NES. Like, I mean, we had, you know, quite a few games for it. I remember getting, like, even, like, a Game Genie later on that helped us beat games that we were, you know, had like a hard time with that would never have been able to be beaten otherwise, and a lot of rentals and all that stuff. And I love the NES, but like, I don't know. I don't think I still have that same nostalgia for it like that, like you do for that as your first console, which is weird because I do have a ton of great memories in playing a ton of games for it. Like, a ton of games. Like, we had a lot of games, like, over time. Like, when we were, like, swimming them, I don't know how we kept, like, how I got so much exposure to them. I guess, you know, going to cousins' houses and all stuff and playing theirs a lot too, but I just remember us having, like, random games like Captain Skyhawk, and I don't know where they came from, but we had them. But yeah, but I did answer this question myself on the other part of this episode, so I guess I won't really, like, try and pick another system, but you did say your rental story and the late fee story. Like, I have an extreme version of that, too, that I'll share, that I'm pretty sure you know about. But the my brother and I, Casey, you know him. You've met him a couple times. He's I don't know exactly how old it was. Like, it was 1997 or no, it was early 98 technically. But Resident Evil 2 had just released, and we were where we lived out in the middle of nowhere in here in Arizona. Like, we went to town, quote unquote, and it wasn't to Casa Grande. It was to Ahwatukee, so even bigger town. But on the way driving back home from there, like, we convinced our mom to, like, stop at this Hollywood Video, and like, we didn't have a membership card for that, so we were like, we convinced her, hey, get a card, like, you know, open up a membership here, like, let us rent these two games, and, like, we'll take them back, like, you know, later, even if it's, like, a little bit late, that's okay, we'll bring them back. And she was like, no, I don't know when we're coming back out here again, no, no, no. And we just, like, badgered her and, like, you know, probably guilted her a little bit too. But we didn't care if they were brought back or not. Like, you know, we didn't care for the impact that might make. You know, we just wanted to play something new. So we rented both Resident Evil 2 and Final Fantasy 7 on the PlayStation, which Final Fantasy 7 I've already talked about multiple times this podcast for various reasons of it being, like, my favorite game ever, and, like, the soundtrack, and having an emotional connection to the game beyond the game itself. Like, it has made appearances many times in my life, just, like, the sheer impact that game made. But that's how we initially got our first copy of it, was via a rental at Hollywood Video that we kept for months and months and months. It actually was never returned. We ended up moving to, like, California and everything, and I still had the discs that had, like, the Hollywood Video stickers, like, stuck to them for, like, a, you know, security or something like that. I don't know what the reason for it was. But I do remember us getting a late bill in the mail eventually, and I swear it was like $400-something from them, later. Which it seems like unfair. I feel like they should have, like, cool, we'll charge you full price to replace the games, plus, like, a maximum rental time fee penalty. Like, cool, they made their money, they made their profit, and they got the games replaced. Like, but, you know, for them to have some potentially, like, maximum growing and then sent to collections type situation, it's kind of crazy. But it was awesome. We didn't have a memory card at the time yet. It was, the PlayStation was still somewhat newer to us, or it was my PlayStation, I think, because, like, we traded in our Sega Genesis and I saved up other money, and we were just, like, video gameless for a couple months. But I did get to go in and get my PlayStation with no game, just the demo disc of, like, Parappa and stuff like that it came with. But eventually got a few games, Twisted Metal and stuff, and I would, like, just hope the games use, like, a password save system, because some of the old ones did. But still didn't have a memory card at that time, so we played Final Fantasy, and we would just play it in, like, bursts of, like, how much can we play, how far can we get, let's put, you know, 10 hours into it on a massive marathon day, and maybe try not to turn the system off or leave it on overnight, or hope that it doesn't get shut off, and, you know, ultimately it would eventually have to be powered off, and, you know, next time we tried, we'd have to play all over again and start from the beginning. And so we did the beginning section of the game, like, multiple times over. Like, I'm super familiar with those early parts of the game just because of that. And Resident Evil 2, same thing. Like, a very skilled player can beat that game, you know, with minimum saves, using only a knife and all these crazy things. But we weren't necessarily that good. But the farthest we got at one point, we were playing at our friend Austin and Thomas's house, and Thomas and I were, like, kind of passing the controller back and forth. But we got to a point where it was not the last boss, but it was a fight against one of the versions of the last boss towards the end of the game. And we ended up running out of ammo, having only the knife and having no ability to do otherwise. We just knew, we were like, we paused it. We just knew, like, cool, this is the end. We don't have a memory card. Like, are we ever going to get back to this point again? I don't know. but like, wow, you know, we gave it a really good go. And I don't know that I ever really played it after that. But yeah, Hollywood Video Rental, that just we kept forever.
That's but, yeah. funny. Did you guys beat that last boss?
No, we never did. And we never, like, even after getting a memory card and everything, I don't know that I ever really went back to it. Actually, I take that back. I do remember getting an action replay, which was kind of like a Game Shark. And there were some, like, unique codes for that that would, like, make all the events in the game have already happened. Like, if the dogs were going to jump through a window, or, like, things were going to, like, spook you from, like, a door, like, all those things would have already happened. And I do remember seeing, like, some things in the game that, like, didn't actually make it into the final cut. Like, there was a window that was broken that never actually did anything in the full game, but it must have been something, like, early in development that was just left on the cutting room floor. But I do remember seeing that stuff as a kid, like, oh, cool, like, this is something that doesn't actually happen. So I think I did finish it via, like, cheating, you know, unlimited health and things like that, like, that would let me actually get, you know, get to it much later in life, or, you know, probably 3 or 4 years after that, once I got that action replay. But yeah, that's it.
Cool.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing the Super NES. Did you want to share, anything else then before we wrap this episode? Do you have a favorite? Well, maybe I won't put that on you. Maybe that'll be a future episode, a favorite SNES game or a favorite game there. That'll be a future conversation.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me, and I appreciate the time I get to speak to you, Nicole. Hopefully, we get to speak again soon.
Yeah, hopefully. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye.
Bye.